I would like to welcome you all for our fifth session of An Introduction to Self-Compassion with Robert Gonzalez.
Welcome to everybody. I would like to begin with an opening meditation to set the tone, so to speak, to encourage and support a presence in engaging in this class. What I would like to do is ask each person, if you wish, to close your eyes, bring your attention and your awareness to the body, to your breath. Notice and be with your breath, gently, simply allowing, noticing. And allow yourself simply to rest into and be with the breathing. Notice the feeling tone in your body and in your emotions. Just be with whatever is present. Notice if your mind has a tendency to evaluate what you were feeling as pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad, acceptable, unacceptable. Just notice that the part of you that might be evaluating your experience in this way. And be with that thought or evaluation in a way that doesn't resist, it simply allows that thinking process if it is present in you. Continue to simply be steady and easy with yourself. Relax. Being with the body. If your feet are flat on the floor, notice the feeling of the contact between your feet and the floor. Be with the solidity of your body and the movement of the energies in your body. So much of this work is about allowing in an easy and gentle way with the life, the aliveness in you and through you. There's a certain awareness that comes from this inner work that holds the form of your experience, whatever it is, as simply life energy, neither good nor bad, your simple aliveness is present. Throughout the class, I will ask you to, whenever it is, to momentarily, from moment to moment, remember the breath, remember the present moment, stay connected to what's alive in you as best as you're able to. So in the place that you're at right now, shift your attention to whatever receptivity there is there. I'm going to begin this class with a reading. This reading is by Stephen Schwartz. I'm going to read about three or four sentences, pause for a few moments of silence, and if there's perhaps two or three people for whom receiving the reading resonates and touches something that you'd like to share, we'll take a few moments for that. we live in a vulnerability, an edge between what we think is going on and a great mystery. Rather than allowing ourselves to enter into the truth of that vulnerability, we create a stance to protect ourselves from it. It seems dangerous to encounter the vulnerability directly. So we create a fantasized scenario which keeps us away from the feelings we assume to be dangerous. We substitute a kind of cartoon made up of personal beliefs, images, assumptions, and associations for the mystery and spaciousness of what exists. It will take a few moments. If hearing this reading resonates in anyone, if you care to share in the space for other people to hear, I would invite that now. I see two hands up. Would you care to share what's alive in you hearing this reading?
Yeah, I just feel a kind of joy and a sadness, a sadness of the time I spend in my stories that I create to keep me from that spaciousness, and a deep joy that this work that you're really encouraging people, just a joy that I'm aware there's another way, even though I keep choosing the old way, and the reading really encourages me, and to accept there's maybe reasons I'm choosing the old way still, and that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you care to share?
When I heard the line about the cartoons and the images that we create that keeps us from the experience of the mystery, it just really spoke to that place in me that I am noticing more and more of how I kind of protect and distance myself from being in the moment with what I'm engaging in, either with another person or even with myself. Yeah, just similar to the joy of Stephen being able to give it a name, which helps me have more spaciousness for moving out of judgment even when I notice it happening, and just having more of a sense of how much I'm longing to have it be different, to really engage fully in life with all the vulnerability and really feel my own tenderness when I'm feeling nervous or anxious, and just noticing how that is and that it does keep me from just experiencing what's happening without all the superfluous things that I've imprinted. So I really love that reading. Thank you.
Thank you. The focus of today will certainly include the whole focus of this course, but in particular, if you're remembering the diagram that had the three concentric circles that address a certain aspect of our human experience, I'm just going to briefly and quickly describe that. Our aliveness, our authenticity, the fullness of our being is at the core of our being, not always available to experience or to express. One of the reasons is that we have, in our wounding and in our experience in life, we have been hurt, we have been wounded, we have experienced things that encourage us to disconnect from that. And when we're wounded, we carry that wounding in our being, not even always accessing that part, which is our vulnerability. Our vulnerability doesn't always necessarily touch into wounding, but the part of an open vulnerability, the part of it that carries some of the deeper yearnings, where there's perhaps fragility and tenderness, where our deepest longings lie, where there are qualities of innocence, perhaps, as that child part of us that was hurt lies in that. That energetic quality lies within that vulnerability. And so accessing that vulnerability is not always easy. One of the reasons that it isn't easy among many is that even the word vulnerability, the way that concept is used in our culture, or one of the ways it's used, is as though it's a weakness, or as though we don't want to open ourselves vulnerable to attack, because then we will be hurt. So vulnerability has a connotation that we want to move away from this rather than toward it. This work of self-compassion, the more we do it, it reveals that the vulnerability is really the pathway into it, is the source of our aliveness, that it emerges as aliveness. And maybe at certain stages of touching that vulnerability, when we get past some of the protective mechanisms, is that there is a fear there and a deep desire to trust that if we're going to open in our vulnerability, if we're going to open that tender yearning or the hurt, is that we so long for trust, trusting that we will be received, that we will be held in an open way, in a non-judgmental, welcoming manner. So that often is the deepest part of our yearning. And I also want to speak to and bring attention to that there are those mechanisms within our system that protect and defend against what appears to be a threat to ourself, a threat to our well-being. And those protective and defensive structures I spoke to earlier in the course. One of the things I want to speak to today is one of the forms that this takes within us, within our system, is what I would call our persona, or how we present ourselves, how we show up in the world, and sort of a mask, so to speak, but not in a negative sense, but in a sense of, as we walk through life, we have what we want to show to people. We have how we lead in life. And very often how we lead in life is a function of the protective and defensive structures. For example, one way of saying this is that we want to look good. We want to look acceptable. Perhaps we want others to like us. We want approval. We want to appear mature and together, and not make mistakes, not look weak. That's one of the forms. Certainly there's many, many forms in what we present to life, to others, as the persona part of us. While not judging it as bad, it can be limiting because it often protects something that is more open, more authentic, more vulnerable, where there may be fear and pain associated with this. And so our persona is that part of us that often serves to protect. For example, if I protect myself as together, as I'm capable, I'm strong, I'm mature, then when what I might be protecting at a given moment in life is I may feel confused, I may feel scared, I may feel something where my vulnerability lies, and I don't always want to show that. Of course, it depends on the relationship or the context within which this occurs, but I don't always know that my vulnerability, my truth, if it's judged as not together or weak or vulnerable, that I'm going to be fully met and accepted with that part of me, a true and honest in that moment, that part of me. And so what this requires for me, one very important part is when I'm not in relationship, I want to be able to approach that part of myself in a self-compassionate way. I want to be able to be honest with how I present myself and to approach myself with that openness and acceptance that I may be stimulated in some painful way and allowing that painful experience and welcoming it. And I also would do that even though it's self-compassion in the company of another, so that all of us as we are here and as perhaps we work in small pairs, for example, that as I break the group into working with another person, that part of what I'm going to ask you to do is just begin to share and talk about one's individual experience with your own vulnerability. I think I've touched on many of the primary elements of this that I'd like to address for today. There's some other elements that I want to bring. Self-compassion is how we can approach our inner experience. And there's different aspects of this when we enter into, in a feeling way, in an experiential way, an experience in which we may be touching into some painful, some unpleasant, some uncomfortable part of our experience, the place where we are vulnerable. But one of the elements of this inner work, this inner exploration, is how we approach ourselves. And so one of the primary ways to approach ourselves is the first stage is to sort of not do anything, but just take the time, just sort of be with it. As I'm describing this, what my hope and intention is that if there's anything in you, in your experience right now, where there may be a corresponding to what I'm saying, is if you would follow me more than conceptually, but experientially. So just follow this if you can. You enter into this. You feel, you allow whatever the sensation, whatever that is, even though there may be voices in you, thoughts and stories about the experience. And watch even that tendency. So this inner watchfulness can take the form when there is a real openness into a curiosity, rather than coming to the conclusion that we know what's going on, that we understand it, and it's part of the narrative and story that we are so used to, that maybe we can come to the place where we truly are curious about what is this? What is this feeling? What is this sensation? This whole process is actually an ongoing process, so we may not be able to do that at first, but to know that curiosity supports the openness in which we can more openly receive the heart of our experiencing. When we touch into the actual unfulfilled longing or pain or tenderness or difficulty, whether it's in anxiety, confusion, feeling lost, sad, whatever it is, there's often the place in our vulnerability where we feel into it and simply mourn. We see and feel into that there is an unfulfilled longing, that there may be a yearning for warmth, for acceptance, for love, or other qualities that aren't present. So we yearn for that and we allow ourselves to mourn it. Again, is there anyone in hearing my words that has any resonant experience with anything I'm sharing or care to ask any questions? I'd like to engage with anybody that has that.
I noticed over the weekend an increased capacity in me to experience this sense of allowing what my experience was, especially regarding experiences in which I acted in an outward manner that was uncomfortable to me, meaning I said or did things that I later felt regret about. I didn't experience the allowing in the moment, but I experienced it a little bit later as I noticed my regret. And I found that I would start to cry as the spaciousness opened up around my regret and sorrow. And my sense was that I was mourning as I looked back and noticed these experiences. It was like a crying of release, of just the spaciousness itself, the allowing of my own experience with a level of love and acceptance that's, I think, new to me at this point, just brought about this kind of mourning in release. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense, and I'm really glad you shared it, because your experience and other people's experiences, I'm hearing them as an expression of what happens, or one of the things that happens in this self-compassion. And it's valuable because it's a living experience rather than me just talking about it. So that's one level of response I have. And one of the things that I value about what you're saying is that we're not always able to do it in the moment. And so afterwards is when you can connect with yourself and create this opportunity to have this inner spaciousness and to create that. And so I very much resonate in my experience with what you shared, is that the morning of is the relief of the spaciousness that you didn't have before, and how that brings with it a quality of love and warmth and acceptance. Is that accurate?
Yes, that describes it very well.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for that reflection.
I see another hand.
I notice that when I'm in relationship with another and I'm telling myself that they've done something that is confusing or painful, it's pretty easy for me to feel my body response and notice and fairly quickly be able to really get a sense of what need isn't being met. And then in the moment I can do that, and afterwards I can pretty easily go into the mourning. What I'm noticing is that when there's something happening in relationship to something, for instance, I raised my hand in a teleseminar a few days ago, and it was the first time I had spoken, and there were about 400 people on the call, and I noticed that while I was waiting to be called on, this nervousness and tension inside of me, like my face was flushed, and I had all this bodily sensation, and I was able to feel the feelings and to have some curiosity, like, wow, what's that about? Oh, you're just really anxious and, you know, wanting to just trust. But there was something about really longing to be able to go into the mourning piece then. Like, what is it that I'm needing that I'm afraid isn't going to happen? I mean, it's just me thoughts I'm telling myself and not something somebody's done to me. The mourning piece is a little bit harder to access, and I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Well, there's two elements to what you said, I think, that are important. It sounds like in the midst of this experience that you were feeling the experience that was distressing, uncomfortable, nervous, and that in that you were longing to touch into a softer, warm, accepting place that comes with mourning. Is that
correct?
Accurate?
You know, the judgments, like you're going to talk too much, you're not going to be understood, and I thought I could really hold that, able to really quickly deepen into the beauty and the longing of it, and I'm wondering if there's...
This is a very important part of self-compassion, is that there is a tendency, as I'm hearing you, for the mind to want to be another place other than where you are. You've done it before, you've softened before, mourning has created an opening and relief, but in the moment you're not there. You're feeling the anxiety. So what this approach shows us is that whatever is there, rather than trying to be in a different place, I breathe into and allow this, and just let it be there. The breath supports us in doing this. Sometimes the racing of the mind is so strong that it's difficult to simply be with that. So being with the energy without necessarily labeling it, or even identifying the label of a need, creating a spacious awareness within that feeling itself and breathing, is sometimes the only thing I can do. This requires a lot of things. It requires a kind of trust and patience, that even this intensity, there's an allowing of it. And while it's not a conceptual okay, there's an experiential okay in it. There's a permission to feel it. So for me, this is the most important part that I am drawn to in the experience that you're sharing. So I'm wondering how you feel hearing this.
It's a really beautiful reminder and a confirmation, Robert, because, you know, I was almost going to lower my hand on that call because the nervousness was so pervasive. And I did owe it to be okay in the noticing. I actually was able to breathe into it. And in this moment, I'm celebrating that I was able to do that. And it's a part of the question that I was wanting to raise, and I think I've just heard you answer it indirectly, is that in that moment, that was all I could do because she called on me, you know, and I just was like, wow, my heart's really racing. Ah, and I just took a deep breath, and I just noticed it, and I allowed it to be okay so that I could speak. And then what I did with it is really what I was questioning, and that's the piece that I'm just taking away from this, is that after the fact, noticing what happened and can take some time with myself to deepen into what were those thoughts that were creating the nervousness actually speaking to, because that's where the longing to be held with care, to be seen for who I am, to have ease and that comfort that I can trust, that I can speak from my heart and people can hear me. So, and that's the piece that I didn't do, and that's what I'm taking away from this, and thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
I've noticed how inside me, by just simply being aware, not even trying to make myself be in any particular state. This morning, I was really anxious about something that's going on in my life, and I doing what I normally do when I'm anxious, which is just going into planning. You know, how can I avoid this thing by planning my life differently? And I thought, well, let me just take a moment here to just touch base with what I'm actually feeling. And I felt that anxiety. I felt the worry, and it was already all over my body. I just kind of was noticing that it was everywhere. And then I thought, what am I yearning for here? And then I proceeded to plan, but it was still quite an interesting shift. I noticed that I just didn't feel as anxious. I can't say that I got into a beautiful, peaceful place, but I definitely had a shift. And I found myself stopping for a moment and thinking, now what is going on here? Why does just paying attention make a shift?
Thank you for sharing that experience. There's two things I want to say. One is that we don't know what's going to result from that always. It's going to lead us into a peaceful place. But you noticed a shift. And so much of this work for me is a simple kind of patience, patience with ourselves, not necessarily expecting that it's going to lead to something else, but a kind of patience and trust that when I approach myself, it's a form of care. It's a form of an inner care as opposed to how we care for ourselves outside by an outer action. So this patience that we are caring for ourselves for this inner discomfort, creating space for it, I think, is one of the greatest things that we can do in caring for ourselves, even if it shifted just in a way where there's relief. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I see another hand.
I feel a little anxious now, reflecting on my trying to do this self-compassion exercise this week. Before this session started, I wrote my core belief about this. And I wrote down this belief. I wrote that I can do the self-compassion exercise because it would be too painful and I have no relief. And while you were speaking about curiosity toward myself, allowing and openness, I feel more anxious and more longing at the same time.
I just want to understand for a moment here, more anxious and more longing when you bring in the possibility of being curious.
Yes.
What happens before that is this belief comes to you around, I can't do this because it would be too painful. There's no relief for me in this self-compassion.
Yes.
I'd like to respond to that unless there's something more that you wanted to share to complete this.
Only one thing. Now, when you were speaking about that, another thought came in my mind. It is, how can I do this if I'm so scared to try? Who can help me if I don't trust me in this?
What you're sharing for me is important to recognize that, say it's a belief, it's a thought, I can't do this because it would be too painful, that there's no relief. And how can I do this if I'm so scared by it, and who can help me? How you approach that thought is very important to this self-connection and self-compassion. And so I just want to say there's a principle in this inner work, so that when we can be aware of this principle, it supports us in approaching our inner experience. The principle is every thought points to a need. It points to a longing. There's two things you can do. You can believe the thought, which often continues to close you down or support you in some disconnection, or you can listen to the thought empathically and sense and feel into and ask yourself, what is the longing behind the thought? So that you feel pain, and then in the midst of it, you start thinking, I can't do this because it would be too painful. There's no relief in this. Pause. And in this moment, maybe you can just be with me in the moment, saying, well, let me ask you, is the thought that you described earlier, the thought that comes up when you're doing the self-compassion exercise, it said, I can't do this because it would be too painful,
yes,
that there's no relief. Can you connect to that in any way right now?
Now, speaking with you, I feel support. So I feel more open to myself.
So in this moment, there's not so much that fear. You have a sense of openness from the support that you're receiving.
Yes.
So what I want to do is just address, just to hold what I share with you in a way that can support you if and when you experience this again. So that what I'm hearing is that sometimes there's an intensity of when you approach yourself that this thought comes up so strongly, I can't do this because it would be too painful. So listening to the thought, what is the yearning in that thought? Are you longing to have some sense of ease and trust that you can actually feel the pain and you would still be okay? You have the capacity to feel the pain fully. You would be okay in this. Does that resonate with something, the need or the longing that is behind the thought?
Yes, if I say to myself that it's okay.
So what are you feeling right now?
A little more hope, more power, a little more power, and tenderness, maybe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. So before we go into what I'm going to suggest to just momentarily work with someone else, and I'm going to describe that, is often what gives rise to these thoughts when we encounter our inner discomfort or pain is the thoughts we have about pain. Somehow there's notions that even the notion that something can be too painful, that we can't handle it. That's a very common thread that I think that we all have encountered in some way and that we've incorporated. One way that the self-compassion approach supports us is to be able to feel into a sensation that we're calling pain. Just feel the sensation of it without the label of pain. And even emotions have a sensation to them, to allow the feeling of the sensation that a particular emotional feeling has, how it feels in the body, where it is, how big it is, their shape, their color. We allow whatever it is to be there, that sensation of life energy that we labeled pain. Very often it helps us to shift into the allowing it when we can be free from the interpretation of how we label our feeling. So what I'd like to do is to break you into pairs, and I'm going to describe what I'd like you to do in the pairs. The focus of this particular class today has to do with our persona and our vulnerability. So just the beginning exploration of our persona and our vulnerability. And what I'd like you to do with each person would identify and share an experience that you have of your own vulnerability, whatever form that takes. It could be pain, it could be confusion, but it also could be something that you label as positive, joy or love or warmth. That is your vulnerability that is protected, that you're not fully sharing or you haven't shared. You can choose an experience in your life that is present or that is kind of fresh that you can share about identifying the vulnerability, and perhaps even identifying what you did instead, how you didn't share that, how perhaps there was part of how you habitually present yourself with a persona or with how it's protected or defended. So I'd like each of you to take an opportunity to share that and just allow what evolves from that, whatever naturally will evolve from that. And then we'll pause and I'd like to hear some sharing about that. And then we'll do the second half of this process in pairs. So before we break into pairs, is there anybody that wants any clarity about what I'm asking you to do?
Yeah, I'm not even sure how to ask my question. I'm just feeling confused about the exercise.
Can you connect to an experience of your own vulnerability?
I think that's where I'm getting stuck, an experience of my vulnerability. That's where I'm stuck. I don't quite know what you mean.
By vulnerability, it could be something that is a painful experience, an uncomfortable, a distressing experience. That is, if you were to touch it and begin to feel it or express it, that there may be a reluctance in you. I mean, this isn't all vulnerabilities, but it may have a sense of vulnerability in that it's open, it's tender, and that the other part of it is that there's a tendency in us as human beings to not share that because we want to protect that. We don't know that we'll be understood or accepted. Yeah. So sharing that part of it.
For me, just hearing your description of what we're supposed to do just shut me down so tight I couldn't even read this, what I wrote.
Yeah, and I'm wondering that even in that shutting down, there may be some vulnerability in that, maybe some fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the edge of fear sometimes has that shutting down and it's tight, and as we become vulnerable, it becomes a little looser or softer, shaky perhaps from rigid fear into vulnerable fear. Do you resonate with that?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay. Thanks for asking. The amount of time that I'm going to ask is about 7 minutes for each person. I don't know. For some, it may be more than you need. For others, it may be not enough. So it'll be 14 minutes. Each person really allows yourself to share as fully as you can. The other person primarily is just listening. And what's most important is to not offer advice or analysis or solution, but just listen and ask the person who's sharing what they want, what could be supportive of them. Maybe an empathic response, maybe empathizing with the sharing by sensing into what they're feeling, or maybe even simply silent listening. So that would be my suggestion, is present, silent, listening, and ask the other person how they want to be listened to, what kind of support, perhaps through empathy. So why don't we begin the groups right now? So welcome back to the main room. I would like to take some time for those of you who would like to share or ask questions. And I think some of what I'd like to receive would be just sharing about, were there any shifts or realizations or any other kinds of experiences that you'd like to share, would be one. And the other one would be, are there any challenges for you in this self-compassion practice that you're experiencing, that perhaps you shared, came up in your small group? So I'd love to spend a little bit of time with this part. So if anybody has some of that sharing, you could raise your hand. So I'd love to hear from you.
Yes, I got to share a vulnerability that I was going to say. I did actually experience the shift. I was feeling a lot of tension in my body, armoring. I could feel my heart harden as I talked about this experience. I did feel a relaxing. I identified the feelings that were there. Very helpful. I got to the point where, you know, I was kind of mourning a loss that I was experiencing. And then when I wanted to go to that next level, I was feeling a little stuck. And Amanda was very helpful about the underlying yearning that might take me to the place of shifting to experience the unmet need. But that part, honestly, is still a little vague and unclear to me. So that's where I would like some help.
So when you say shifting to experience an unmet need, let's go back to what you shared before. You said there was a mourning in that. So for me, let me share a good bit about mourning and connect to you about this. For me, mourning is more than the feeling of sadness. It includes the unmet longing. So the need is already embedded in the mourning. So we mourn because we value something. Something is beautiful or something is valuable that is unfulfilled that we mourn for. So there's always beauty in the mourning. Let me ask you, what were you mourning? The loss of what?
Financial loss.
Okay. So let's say with this financial loss, there's the factual part of it, the stuff that you mourn, perhaps the money and what that represents. So the longing behind that, the loss is, I'm wondering if you yearn for a quality of relaxation that comes with a security. You can relax
yes.
when you know that there's security there.
Yeah.
So even as I reflect that back to you, do you have a sense of how you so value a bodily felt relaxing that comes with security? How does that feel in your body right now? The beauty of security that was missed in this situation, but you long for it.
It feels very relaxing, very comforting, peaceful.
What I'm hearing is the relaxing, the peacefulness, is actually the fullness of what is so important to you that was not fulfilled with this financial loss. There's a real loss, and there's pain in that. Pain because it touches what you so long for.
Yeah, and I can very tangibly feel the armoring. I protect myself from feeling that pain, how I harden up against it.
So I'm glad to hear that there's awareness there. You can just notice the hardening and the tensing up. And just that noticing, even in the noticing, there's the beginning of space. There's the beginning of the awareness that is residing in the noticing itself. Even if the tightening doesn't shift or go away, you're coming to it by being with it in your noticing rather than being entirely lost in the tension itself. That is an important part of this self-compassionate awareness with ourselves.
I definitely felt softening and coming to a much more relaxed place in my body, my mind. And there was a lot of recrimination.
So the recrimination is that self-judging part of you beating yourself up for something you wish you had done differently. So even in that recrimination and that self-judging voice, it's possible to approach that voice with empathy, because there is pain in that recrimination, how you value and long for something, perhaps awareness, a knowledge of something before you had made this choice that led to the financial loss, perhaps mourning even in that recrimination.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. I see another hand.
I had a question about, it's actually quite helpful in taking care of ourselves to not share our vulnerability. I brought up a very precious moment that I experienced with you last week. I realized that I had not shared that with my wife, and may not, because I think it's precious to me and it might not be accepted that well or appreciated. Is that a wise protection?
Yes. All of these questions and sharings almost always bring up something that's very valuable. Perhaps one of the things that might be in your question, and I'll check with you and see if it resonates with other people, is in this notion about there's value in opening up to our vulnerability and sharing with other people, sometimes our mind interprets as a should, that we should communicate our vulnerability, simply because it's helpful sometimes when we do, and that we have relief, relaxation, there's warmth of being heard and being accepted, that our mind turns it into, well, then if that's the case, then I think I should share my vulnerability. And if that's part of your question, then for me, I would want to reframe your question into that hesitancy to share whatever it is that is precious in your experience with your wife is a life that's coming alive in you. And I would want, if that was coming alive in me, to pay attention to that. Maybe it's protection, maybe it's not, but it's something that is calling for attention and for empathy.
That reluctance to share is what you're saying I should pay attention to.
Yes, because it's calling for something. There's always a thread to a longing or a need. I'm wondering if that reluctance is really because you're really wanting to trust that if you share something that's precious and vulnerable and very important to anyone, your wife, that you want to trust that it will be received in a way that would support you with full acceptance and with care.
I think that is my longing. And I was not recognizing the should I was creating, but I think you're right.
Sometimes that should
that
is not
sense.
Conscious or verbal thought to it, but it's there nonetheless in your feeling. Are you complete?
Yeah, I'm feeling very heard and understood. So thank you.
Thank you. One of the reasons I ask you to break into pairs and connect, and that even though the focus of this class is self-compassion, is that in the meeting and sharing with another, often the other person, simply in providing empathy and perhaps reflecting back, gives you something that you can't always do for yourself, or that you're not always able to give yourself. So the form of presence and empathy from another person eventually supports the kind of presence and empathy you can offer yourself. So meeting with another person and sharing your own vulnerability, your own honesty and authenticity, and receiving empathy or presence or acceptance from another is a really important part of this process. Self-compassion does not necessarily mean that we have to do this by ourselves or that we're alone. It actually is that we can support ourselves in self-compassionately connecting. And we sometimes aren't able to do it, so we have a need for support that we receive from other people. I do have a specific question in addition to any sharing or questions that other people have. I'm wondering if anyone experienced perhaps a challenge in either today or previous to today, the other classes and the in-between practices. Any particular challenge in this process of self-compassion? An example of that challenge might be a voice that says, or a part of you that says, you know, I have this pain or discomfort and I want it to change. I don't want to go into it. And that there's an unwillingness to open into this part of you. And that might be an example of a challenge that you might experience in the self-compassion process. So I'm wondering if there's that or any other challenge. My intention in this is to want to support everyone in this process.
The challenge that I notice relates to what I shared in the pair group. It was an experience of going into a workshop this weekend, unexpectedly taking my 6-year-old son with me. And what I noticed in myself as I was driving closer and closer to this workshop was what you mentioned a little bit before, that the racing of my mind, the judgments and the thoughts that I had about what other people would be thinking about me were so strong. It was like a class 4 rapids in my head, and I had a sense about me of wanting to put some space around that, and I experienced it just being like the class 4 rapids, almost like I could barely even put my toe in the water to create this sense of spaciousness. And I find that to be a huge challenge for me at times, and I'm wondering if you might be willing to speak to that a bit.
Yes. First, I want to make a distinction between in-the-moment self-compassion. In the midst of this class 4 rapid intensity that is so intense and the voice is coming so fast and hard that the notion of creating spaciousness may seem so far away as a possibility. So given that that does occur, really addresses a different kind of self-acceptance. Because in this practice, again, I mentioned before, the subtle should or the obvious should. and I'm not sure that that's active in what you're saying, but that there may be this kind of notion that I should be able to, in the midst of this, to offer myself compassion. And if it's not a should, maybe there's another possibility of a sense of urgency, that, oh my God, I can't stand this, it's so intense, so strong, that I just have to create spaciousness. So you're adding something else on top of the distressing experience in the first place. So those could be a couple of tendencies. So there's two levels that I want to answer this on. One is in the immediacy, that part of this practice is a kind of cultivating, no matter what is happening, even the voices are so strong, I can't create spaciousness, that maybe all I can do is breathe. So sometimes we're not able to get to a place of spaciousness, that what we can do is just allowing the intensity, just allowing intensity, that thinking that there's a spacious place to go. There's a paradox about that, is when you just be with the breathing of it, just say, okay, here you are, intensity, here you are, rapids, go with it, be with it. It's uncomfortable, it's painful, it's distressing, whatever it is, but be with it and breathe in it, breathe through it. That may be all you're able to do in that moment, all you're able to do. And when you are able to come to this in a more spacious way after the workshop, if it's still alive, maybe then would be the first opportunity to create a different kind of physical spaciousness and opportunity to then approach it from a different place because the stimulating situation is over with.
Yes, I can see how there was a should about the timing. I should be able to create this spaciousness now.
Yeah. So I'm glad you acknowledge that, because those voices can be so strong that we can turn any practice, if you want to call this a spiritual practice or any practice, into a demand. And it's counter to the very spirit of this practice. That should certainly points to a value that you would want to create spaciousness. It's also resisting the very nature of the intensity, almost saying, you can't be here, I want spaciousness instead, something like that.
I keep coming to this. I see this in my notebook for this class and in my notes from other classes with you. I keep writing the word allow. I can guess what you're going to say.
Yeah. What do you think I'm going to say?
You're going to say allow.
I'm going to say something different, actually. Rather than allow, now, it's not the word that's important. It's not something that you say to yourself that's important. It's something that you do with your body. Even though I might describe that what you do with your body is allowing, it may be that the word allowing doesn't really bring forth the real relaxation, the real being with.
Even as I say it, I can hear the demand in it.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, you know, you're whipping a horse and say, okay, allow. And all the horse can do is do what horses do. So all your intensity can do is do what your intensity does. So what you're doing is, rather than allow, you just say, okay, you experience whatever you are, anxiety, do your thing, be what you are, be anxious, be tight, be scared, just do it, just breathe into it. Breathe into it, not with the desire to change it, but breathe into it because this is what is in you. You simply bring the breath to it without any thoughts of allowing or spaciousness even. Simply feel the life. Is that helpful?
Yes, it's helpful for me to hear it and come back to it, the essence of it, again and again, this sense of allowing, of simply being with the life that's in me at the moment, however it's expressing itself. And I can see that it's practice. It's the gentle, like you said before, it's bringing patience to it with myself and acknowledging that, as it is with most things, it changes. I hate to make it an expectation, but that it does change over time. It may get easier, or I may be able to just simply be present with myself.
Yes. Yeah. And for me, there's a more encompassing view in this work. And for me, the encompassing view has implicit in it a quality of patience. And so we tend to get impatient sometimes with this kind of a process or this kind of a work. I should be there faster, or I should be able to shift my experience so much quicker, or some version of that. So self-compassion is infinitely patient if we're able to begin the practice of this, just if we begin it even in small ways, even in small increments, to be allowing and patient with ourselves and say, this is all I can do now. This is all I can do. All I can do is just beginning to enter my experience. It doesn't lead to complete relief, complete peace, but it's all I can do is at least come to myself with the intention to care, with the intention to accept. And it's really letting myself be where I am without thinking I have to be in a different place. There's a profound care in that approach.
Yes, I think earlier when I spoke about crying, I think the relief came from that, this sense of seeing myself with so much care and love. I can feel it welling up in me right now, that, oh my gosh, I experienced that. What I experience as one of my deepest longings is just to be experienced in the world with deep care and love.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So I'm wondering if anyone who cares to ask around any other difficulty or challenge or perhaps lack of clarity in this practice of self-compassion as I've been sharing it.
The biggest challenge that seems to come up for me is breathing with the intensity. I suppose you mentioned that, you know, that sometimes it helps to have another person to provide the support, to give that extra support for empathy that we're not able to give ourselves. I can go a certain distance with this on my own, and then there's certain times when, I guess, the fear or the emotion level, even as I talk about it, I'm having difficulty getting the words out, where the intensity level is, you know, something just shorts it out. It's hard to stay with it without someone there to kind of reassurance, I guess, through the process.
Yeah, our challenge, as I'm hearing it, does have to do with sometimes the experience is so strong that is it that you're not able to ask for support or for help or for somebody to be there?
I guess it's partly I do get afraid to ask. Yeah, there's this fear of rejection or fear of failure of reaching out to someone and finding out, okay, going through the experience of not getting the support that I would like to have. So that is a challenge for me, that reaching out part.
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear just the fear. And for me, this is still part of the vulnerability. The person you ask for might have other needs they're trying to meet. You know, you hear that, the no part of it, and the part of you that interprets that as rejection or failure. And the fear of that is strong, could be strong in you, that would prevent you from actually asking. Because it's perhaps too uncomfortable, too painful to be vulnerable enough to ask for support and to receive a no. Yes, I'm hearing the challenges. What do you do in the midst of that, in the midst of so much wanting support, and how strongly this fear of rejection or fear of failure comes into your mind? Does that resonate? Am I hearing your fear accurately?
I'm listening to you. There's a lot of grief happening, a lot of tears happening. Resonates really deep, yeah.
Those tears, that mourning in you right now. I'm not even sure you have the clarity of what you're mourning for, but it's very alive. Something I'm sensing pretty deep and pretty tender is coming forth in you.
Yeah, you spoke about desire for being fully received by another, fully accepting, caring, and supportive way. Yeah, we love to experience more of that.
So even in this moment, how much in your vulnerability you long to have somebody be in your company and to be present to you and to receive your vulnerability. How difficult at times it is to find that presence of another person, and how precious it is.
either find a way to give it to myself or to find it with someone else.
There's this tender balance, I think, in this work and being alive when we value these qualities that we're talking about between I may not always be able to offer, give this compassion and acceptance and empathy to myself, and I may not always be able to get it from someone else. Whether it's the fear of me asking or perhaps there may not be anybody that I know that's available, it brings us to ourselves in a way that sometimes there's these deep feelings that we have, and all we can do is be with ourselves in the best way that we know how to. In that difficulty, in that time of intense pain, where all we can do is be with ourselves, that sometimes can be, not always, can be the richest opportunity to start to build the acceptance of this in the midst of the pain without fighting it. Hopefully this is not heard by your mind as it should, of accessing your own vulnerability.
What's resonating for me is, you know, that word patience. Just to be patient with the process, even if it doesn't always go the way I would like it to, or even if it takes longer, or even if I reach out and it, you know, it doesn't create the support I was hoping for, just that patience.
Yes. Okay, well, I appreciate the feedback a lot. We're coming to a close, and what I'd like to do is to offer a suggested practice to add to the ongoing practice in the self-compassion exercise that you all have the handout for. What I'd like to add to that you do this practice on a daily basis, and however many times a day you would want to do it, or you'd want to practice it. You can practice it formally by sitting down, say 10 minutes or 15 minutes at a time, or whatever amount of time, and actually going through this process. You can do it by journaling it. Take one step of the process, journal it, write it down, experience it, and then go through the whole process journaling it. You can do it with a partner, so that would be a formal practice. Or you can do it informally, that throughout, in the midst of your everyday living, everyday life, you remember to allow, you remember to breathe, you remember to come to your body and come to the sensations, the feelings, and if you're able to allow that, feel it, and sense any needs behind it, any longings, mourn it if it's there. That's a practice. And what I'd like to add to this is what I introduced today as taking note of what I'm calling the persona, as how you lead or what you present, what you want other people to see. And taking note of that and actually bringing your awareness to that without thinking that you shouldn't have a persona. Just noticing it, because I think we all have personas, and just being with it, and perhaps in a way, befriending it, allowing that this part of you perhaps that utilizes a kind of protective intention for you, that maybe that it's been with you for a long time, and maybe it's shifted, maybe it's relaxed a little, but whatever it is, it's an aspect of you that bringing the light of awareness to it is basically what I'm suggesting you do. Notice it. You can even have a dialogue with this part of you. But some part of you wants to be accepted. In the noticing and in the bringing awareness and clarity to it, one can connect to whatever the needing, the valuing, the longing is, even in that persona. And when you're able to identify the persona in any given experience that you have, it may be the doorway or notice whatever vulnerability, authentic feeling is behind that, whatever longing perhaps that you might be protecting through the persona, through that part of what you present to others. So adding the self-compassion exercise by noticing how your persona comes into your experience. So that would be what I would add to this exercise, the continued self-work. Thank you. I'm really grateful for everyone being present. I'm hoping that you were supported in the class. Thank you very much, and we will see each other or talk to each other again. Bye-bye.